The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world. 866-90-RED-EYE. We say around the world because RedEyeRadioShow.com, where we stream live. And right here in the States, get our app. Apple, Android, download it, and within 30 seconds, you're listening.
It'll help you lose weight.
Yeah, that too. Just briefly, because there's not really much to say, didn't seem to be much information about what was happening on the ground in Syria, and the president yesterday much more measured in his comments and talking about, look, here are the choices that we have, and going through the different choices of we can obliterate, and we can obliterate Turkey, which isn't going to happen. We can do economic sanctions, or we can negotiate between the parties. And so I thought it was much more measured, really not a lot of information of what was going on the ground yesterday in Syria, or at least a lot of news coverage on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the president's measured comments, we're back to what I stated to a couple of people who I was in conversations with on social media yesterday. Yeah, the president can come out and, you know, we're looking forward to what he says in the future. So not really much to say. You know, I really don't know where to go with it today.
No, I think it's going to be interesting to watch the developments. You saw the Kurdish leaders saying that, of course, that Turkey had attacked one of the sites where they were holding the prisoners.
Right, right.
That came out. Then there were some, some accounts from someone who was near that area that said that, you know, they were essentially, the Kurds were able to hold that and protect that site. The Kurdish leaders were saying their theory is that that Turkey is trying to, you know, essentially help the prisoners escape, help ISIS escape. I think at some point the president is going to have to address it, because there's no way this doesn't escalate.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, because of his measured tone yesterday and giving out all the options and not doing what he was doing that we disagreed with, and the contradictory messages that he was putting out, I think that he is at least listening to his advisors now as to how to, you know, to the possibilities of what we're going to do and how to sell it.
Right.
Because that's not what was going on. He was speaking top of mind, obviously, over the last couple of days. So we'll see where it where that goes. The other thing is, I'd mentioned the study that was done, and this was from Fox Business on young people. We just started talking about that last hour. Young people are spearheading mental health awareness at the workplace. About half of millennials and 75% of Generation Z have quit their jobs for mental health reasons, according to a new study conducted by Mindshare's partners. It was published in the Harvard Business Review. That's compared to just 20% of respondents overall who said that they have voluntarily left a job in order to prioritize their mental health. And the lowest number, us, doesn't include you, because you're not a baby boomer, are you?
I don't know.
You're outside a boomer.
Yeah.
I just barely got into a boomer. Mm-hmm. For baby boomers, the number was lowest, with less than 10% quitting a job for mental health purposes. So you've got 75% of half of millennials, 75% of Generation Z have quit their jobs for mental health reasons. 10% of baby boomers have done that. And by the way, you have to look at that too, that if it's baby boomers, they're looking over an entire career, are they not?
They're looking over, I would think you would have to. Yeah,
yeah you've
quit a job.
Exactly.
We're that it's not recent.
Right, Generation Z, it has to be recent. Millennials would have to be much more recent, too.
Right.
So they said it should come as no surprise that younger generations are paving the way for, wow, taking away the stigma of mental health. This is how they write it. A Wall Street Journal article published in March labeled millennials a therapy generation as today's 20 and 30-somethings are more likely to turn to therapy and with fewer reservations than young people in previous eras did. A 2017 report for the Center for Collegiate Mental Health at Penn State University found that based on data from 147 colleges and universities, the number of students seeking mental health help increased at 5 times the rate of new students starting college from 2011 to 2016. And Blue Cross and Blue Shield study published in 2018 revealed that major depression diagnosis surged by 44% among millennials from 2013 to 2016.
Yeah.
Now,
my question is, all right, have we expanded what falls into the whole mental health?
Yes, we have.
Because stress, I'm guessing, then falls into that category with many. Even these so-called experts would put it in that category.
Yes.
I don't know of a job that is completely without stress. I don't know of any job that has zero stress.
100% of life can potentially affect your mind in a negative way.
Well, I mean, and then what if you're looking at a situation where a person doesn't like their job, right? It's a hard job.
Right.
It requires hours of standing on your feet or whatever. It's intense labor or it's just long hours. Well, that's stressful. You don't like it. You quit it. You quit the job because you were stressed. There you have mental health. Now, people typically leave their job for, you know, a number of reasons, but it's to go to another job. They get a better job or a different job, maybe closer to home, whatever it is. Or they quit their job. In this case, and I don't know how many of these people quit their job and just became unemployed completely. But most people look at that every day, if you really don't like your job or you're stressed, it's too much stress every day, the thought crosses your mind of leaving.
Well, let me ask this. Are jobs more stressful today than they were 40 years ago?
Yeah, I don't know.
No.
Well, it depends. It depends on the person.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, because it depends on, I guess, the job, the type of job. But the work itself, just working in general.
No, it becomes easier.
Well, you have it easier for many reasons. And technology has made a lot of jobs a ton easier. If it was a hands-on job, or it was lots of physical requirements or something in the past. Now you have robotics and automation that assists the worker very often, or a number of items that have made the job easier. But work in and of itself has always been work.
Yeah.
It's always been going out into the world, learning something, becoming good at it, becoming proficient. It's not easy.
Yeah, but I'd rather not
Never
do
has
it.
Been.
I'd rather not do it. It's taking away my free time, and that's stressing me.
That's the difference.
I can't go do the things that I want in life.
That's the difference.
Work's keeping me from doing the pleasurable things that I wish to do.
Right.
Right now.
Well, because, you know, we saw the study that came out that people, you know, are often depressed if they spend too much time on social media.
Yeah.
What? Because you see other people doing things and you're not doing something and you're seeing their pictures of...
Get off social media.
Right.
Do something.
Then go do something. But it is, I mean, don't we create... It's just the whole thing with World Mental Health Day yesterday. I don't want to, again, diminish anyone's condition.
True mental health, mental problems.
If it's truly a mental health condition.
Right.
But I think we have to be careful of over-coddling a society, especially generations behind us, that are only going to complain more and more and want to be less productive as a society. And I don't... It's my concern isn't that we need those people to get out and work and be a productive society. It's the benefit itself of doing a job, doing it well, and essentially changing the tone. But we have raised kids to believe you shouldn't have to. It shouldn't be that hard. You should be able to work 8 hours. You should walk in, and in 6 months, you should be upper management, and you should be making top money, and it shouldn't be this hard. But the fact of the matter is that I always knew, starting out, in whatever you're starting out in, it's going to take a long time. I'm not going to be young. And then, you know, going into the workforce when I did, I wasn't going to be a billionaire by the age of 25. But I think so many of them believe. Because think about this. If you look at the generations behind us, those generations really haven't known a time when they didn't have one, two, or three websites dedicated to themselves. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. All this attention that I get for me. Me, me, me. It's all about me. It's not what I can go out and do. So they're fully, fully engaged in me. Well, the fact of the matter is that aside from family and close friends, no one really cares about you that much. And you have to get out into the world and earn what you earn. You're not going to walk into the world and become a superstar, a 25-year-old billionaire.
And the majority of this huge increase
right.
of young people quitting their jobs for mental health reasons or stating is because that's what they're being told. All this is taught.
Yes, it's a learned behavior.
This is all learned behavior. We'll talk more about this coming up. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Wintertime is tough on trucks. Extreme cold temperatures can affect everything from batteries to tire inflation to fuel lines, making winter prep essential to the performance of your vehicle. Here's a tip to make sure your rig is ready for the winter months that lie ahead. Have your batteries tested by a certified technician. Dead batteries are one of the most common causes of winter breakdowns. Testing them now will indicate whether or not they can keep up with the electrical demands of your truck this winter. When you have your batteries tested, check the alternator for sufficient amperage and voltage output as well. Find a TA truck service near you to have your electrical system tested by one of our ASE certified technicians today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, we go to Jeff in Baltimore about young people quitting jobs by a much greater margin because of mental health. Let's go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff. You're on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Very good.
Yeah, what's going on? You know, I agree with everything you guys are saying. But I got to thinking at first when you said about the job and the stress, I was like, well, there's no more stress. The job is a job. But, you know, I found in my career, I'm retired law enforcement now, but it got so bad. It just, all the policies and procedures with sexual harassment and stuff that what you can and can't say, I mean, that's a lot of stress in itself, you know. Versus, I mean, not the job itself, but, I mean, there is a lot of stress and just worrying about policies and procedures as far as what you can and can't say. Yeah. You can't say the same thing now you could in 1950.
Well, most people aren't in law enforcement. And law enforcement, when you're a police officer, is a completely different ball game to begin with. I mean, there's stress in that job, to begin with. And you're dealing with people on a daily basis. And so, and you're working for a government entity when it comes to, law enforcement. So that isn't the average job. The average job out there has actually gotten easier. Police officers' jobs probably have gotten tougher.
Oh, I agree with you. And now the stress with the cameras and all that stuff. You know, my dad was one from the 50s. I was in it from the 80s. And my brother was from the 70s until, you know, a couple years ago when we retired. But the kids, and you were talking about the other thing, and I'll let you go. But I raised my kids just like they didn't get a trophy. They tried to get money out of me and say, so my kid could get a trophy playing football. And I said, no, if he don't win, he don't get a trophy. And I'm not giving you extra money for a trophy. Just say my kid passed. But they're achieving a lot better now and working hard just because of the way they were told no, you know, growing up.
Yeah, right. So, well, that's...
Anyway, you guys...
Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate you being out there. Thanks for your service in law enforcement. I would agree with you that if you look at a job like that, it's gotten tougher because of the political correctness where you don't know what to do and the pressure that's been put on by the left. In most private sector jobs, no. Private sector jobs have gotten easier because the labor isn't as hard as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just labor itself. I mean, I remember when I started out and janitor was my first job. But then when I was a steel worker, I mean, that's a tough job. More people in society worked manual labor back then. But I look at, just my experiences and, you know, we talk about, well, college or trade, and my dad told me both. You know, that's the kind of expectations. And so when you have this expectation that, no, you need to go to college, you need to learn a trade, and you need to be good at sales or something else, too. That was my dad's philosophy that he told me at 14 years of age. So the expectations were extremely high.
Sure.
Dad always said, it's going to be tough. And you're going to have to deal with politics. You're going to have to deal with a lot of different things. And you just have to stick in there. But for me, what always got me through is I just wanted to be self-sufficient, and I didn't care how I got there. I wanted the freedom that you got from self-sufficiency. That was so dominant in the culture that I grew up in that the work actually didn't matter, Eric.
No.
What I did didn't matter. It was the ability to have freedom based on being self-sufficient.
Well, because it was looked at as opportunity, and that was the door to freedom. That you had to go and you had to earn that money. That money gave you your freedom, your independence. And these days, when you teach a generation or a number of generations now that they don't have to earn it, that the government will just give it to them simply because they exist, when that thought is there, then they don't want to work as much. Of course they don't want to work as much. Work is stressful. They also might see somebody else, whether they know them or not, making more money, getting more things. But you have to earn those things. One way or the other, you're going to have to earn them. But know when you've been taught that the grass isn't green, it's blue. And when you've been taught that, you know, whatever it is along the way, whatever facts or lack of facts along the way set your own reality, well, it becomes a fantasy for life, right?
care about all Americans. Men, women, children, dogs, cats. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on America's Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, when you read that story about young people quitting their jobs in record numbers because of mental health and how they're looking at it as, oh, we've become much more aware of stress. No, we haven't. What we've done is, I believe that we have become a weaker society, a less strong society, a society that doesn't build as tough as people as we used to build. I look at the jobs that I had and everything, you know, from a janitor to bill collector, steel worker. And I look back at all the jobs that I had, because I've done a ton of jobs in my life. So I've always told you the worst one was a wedding DJ. That's the worst job I ever. You want pressure, be a wedding DJ. But now you don't have to worry about what I had to worry about, because I just showed up and they had everything set up for me. But they would never give me the this is how long ago I did it, the records that the wedding party, you know, you had to have, like, he would guarantee that you would have 10 records, 10 songs, mm-hmm. that you and everything else wasn't guaranteed. Well, he wouldn't give me the 10 songs. And so, you know, the first dance, I wouldn't have the song they requested.
Mm.
So there I had. I actually sat there as a bride's, you know, mother and father was screaming at me for destroying their daughter's wedding. And it wasn't my fault. I just showed up to spin. It was the, you know, the people that ran the sound system service that was supposed to set everything up. I just showed up, and it was supposed to be, you know, turnkey, walk in, right, and do it and leave. And he would screw me. And so, you want stress? That's stress. You've destroyed. There are people out there. Gary McNamara, that talk show host guy, the one that destroyed my daughter's wedding. Ah, that's the guy.
Yeah.
I've always expected somebody's going to call me and say, you have no reason to be telling other people what to do. You destroyed my daughter's wedding. If you can't even get that right, and they would have a point.
Yeah, I've done a few for family members, and I quit doing that.
Yeah, I mean, But I look at all the jobs that I had, everything from manual labor, you know, running, you know, I always talk about running a, anybody who's ever had any machining experience, just a surface grinder. I got a job as a surface grinder, and you think about, and you've seen surface grinders, right? You know, you go up and they got the little magnet on, and they're, you know, very, you know, maybe a, you know, this bed with the magnet on, and you put the part on, and it's maybe about what? 2 feet long, and it goes back and forth, and, or the wheel goes back and forth, or the table goes back and forth. And they told me, yeah, you're going to be a surface grinder. The table's like 20 feet long. You take huge parts and put them on this huge magnet. And then this wheel that has a diameter of like 4 or 5 feet, you have to slowly bring down, you know, manually, and this machine is like 50 years old, and so occasionally the wheel would just drop an inch or two.
Right, yeah.
So I'm sitting there on this huge table, probably a couple of tons moving back and forth, and you'd be trying to, you know, get it just to do the surface grinder on the top of the piece, and it would drop an inch, and the whole wheel would blow up right in front of you. That was a little stressful, but I look back on all of it, and I say this now as someone who is more at the end of his career in jobs than closer to the beginning, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, of course. And nothing was really that hard. Even the stuff I hate, things were hard because I didn't want to do them. I look back, and I told you I'm having lunch with an old colleague of mine, and I was talking to her, and it was because we're going to have lunch when I'm back in New York, and we have it, or we have breakfast. We have it once a year, and I go down and see the beautiful leaves. But she was there because she told me, you know, you hired me 30 years ago, and I said, you know, I became a talk show host 30 years ago. And I said, you're one of the only people that really know how much I didn't want to do this.
Hmm.
Said most people hear me on the radio and say, wow, it's great. You always wanted to be a talk. I never wanted to be a talk show host. I had to be forced to do it. She was there and we talked about it. And she said, why didn't you want to do it? She said, you really objected to it. And I said, because it was easy being a music DJ. And I said, I knew you're scared to death of going on the air and getting something wrong and a caller calling you on it. I felt if that happened, I would feel a tremendous amount of shame. So I didn't feel when I was a first talk show host that I had any depth at all, because I was afraid to talk about any topic due to the fact that I didn't have my bases covered. Scared the hell out of me.
Sure. Yeah.
And so what solves that problem? A tremendous amount of work. And back then, there were no computers. You had to go to the library. You had to read. It was a totally different ballgame then. And I didn't want to. I hated the job because I had to do a tremendous amount of work to feel comfortable in the job. And I didn't want to do the work. It was that simple. And I found it in life that really nothing is, you know, there isn't any job that I ever hated. Not even, you know, again, the janitor didn't create that much, you know, instruction. You know, I didn't need to have that much instruction to do that. But all the other jobs that I did when I was a bill collector, I mean, that was the toughest thing. I think the best preparation I ever got for doing this business is actually not doing talk radio the first time and learning how to get through it, but being a bill collector. When you actually have to pick up the phone and call somebody and tell them, you're delinquent, you've got to pay your bill. Probably telemarketing. If you're a telemarketer and can do it successfully, I don't know what else you can't do in life.
Yeah, sales in general. I mean, if you learn to be a closer, then you've pretty much got it down, and at that point you're going to be successful. Yeah. But that actually is the worst part of it, or hardest part of it, learning to close.
Yes.
Yeah. And because that's the whole point, if you don't close the sale, you don't get paid. Or you don't meet a quota, and you're going to...
That's stressful.
At that point, you're going to get let go. I mean, there are a number of things. If you think about people in different lines of work, HR department. Wow. You know how many regulatory items you have to be aware of?
I look at a good friend of mine who recently retired early, and the reason he sold industrial products. Great salesperson, knew how to close. Problem was, his company could never deliver.
Mm-hmm.
Could never deliver on time, and it drove him nuts. And the stress was unbelievable because you're covering for your company that says you can promise this and you can do it, and they never delivered for him.
Right.
And his price of his product, which was actually a better product than the competitors, it was more expensive, but they couldn't deliver on time. But you know why he stayed in there for as long as he did? Because he had the best service department that nobody could beat. And everybody knew it. And his repeat business understood maybe the company couldn't deliver up front, but when we finally get the product, you have the best service. They fired the service manager. He said, I'm done. If I can't sell the product and I can't service it, how can I sell it?
Right.
Now, that's pressure.
Sure.
But that has existed from the time that there have been salesmen out there. Salespeople can sell a good product or a bad product. And so that's not anything that is new, but you want a tremendous amount of stress. That's stressful because you can't win. You've got the pressure to sell, and then you're going back to your company saying, you're not providing me with the product because on-time delivery is part of the product, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can't provide me with the product on time, and now you can't provide me with the service, and you're more expensive than the competitor. What the hell can I – how can I sell this?
Right. Yeah,
he was a nervous wreck, I mean, near the end of his career. And he's a different person now that he's retired. It's like, whoo. And I said, you know, because he asked me, he said, should I retire? He wanted my advice. And I said, if you say – I've known this person since I was a child. I said, if you're retiring, yeah. If you're making the decision, because I know you overthink everything. So if you're retiring, yeah, you're making the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Said, I'm in a different position than you are with my job. And I said, but yeah, you need to retire and do, if you want to do something else, fine, but you need to get out of this company. And even if you decide to go with another company, but if you wish to retire because you've gone through 30 years of this.
Right.
Well, then, yeah, I can see that, you know, relaxation because of you know, what you chose. And he made a lot of money doing it, and he's fine, but it was like time to go.
Well, I mean, you know, you think about over and over again, I saw this, somebody posted an article, you know, what it takes to, if you're in your 20s or 30s, to retire with, I think it was $3 million. And I thought, there's no way. There are a handful of them, but the majority of them aren't going to get there. Now let's just talk about 1 million. Because you think about what retirement is. Retirement is what? It is, well, the ability to eat when you're old. It really is about your health care and food and shelter. You know, you want your house to be paid off.
Right.
You know, you want everything to be squared away so that you can, well, survive. You know, I mean, we build it out so that we can also enjoy our time off. But really, at its core, it's about surviving when you can no longer produce.
Yes.
And there are that concept is so many. It's just foreign. It's just completely gone. And I don't know how to reinstill that. What happens when you have the people that are in their 20s and 30s now reach 65, 70? And they're not there. The Social Security is not going to be there. It's not going to be there. It is the unfunded mandates we've taken a look at over the years, and that's only going to get worse. That's not going to get any better. They'll move retirement age up to 96. Good luck if you can make it. And it will still only be, you know, a small portion compared to what you put in. It's going to get worse and worse. Because these are the things that happen when a society quits caring about very important items like the national debt. And they quit caring about, well, themselves. The way I've always looked at it is, when I'm old, I got to eat. And I'm getting closer mm-hmm. every day. When I'm old, I got to eat. When I'm old, I got to eat. Well, and the fact of the matter is, you don't have that. If people don't have the instinct for work and don't see it the same way, that in today's society, in their 20s and 30s, then how in the world do you get them to the point of saving for retirement?
I really, and again, I'm coming from the viewpoint of and the environment that I grew up in, and it was never really about what job you worked. It was that job would give me the ability to determine where I'm going in my life, which means it would give me the chance to make the choices I wish to make, and that which is freedom, which mm-hmm. was more important than anything. It was mm-hmm. even more important than the hard job. So even if I hated it, there was more stress in not accomplishing my goal of being free than there was ever stress of the job.
Right.
And that's how I got through. I don't know how other people think. That was my only thought. I wanted to determine where I went in my life on my own. If I couldn't do that, that was stress.
Oh, no,
that
was
stress I couldn't handle.
Right.
The job,
right.
Even if the job was hard and I hated the job, it still, at the end of the day, gave me the ability to determine where I went in my life. And from the time I was, before high school,
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't. That's always been a part of me. Which is, you know, why I'm not married. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Breaking news from the last couple of hours. An explosion was reported on an Iranian oil tanker on Friday, about 60 miles off the coast of Saudi Arabia, in what's being eyed as a, quote, terrorist attack Iranian officials said two rockets struck the Iranian tanker. The tanker, which is owned by the National Iranian Oil Company, suffered serious damage. The Iranian news media said the tanker is located on the Red Sea. There was no immediate acknowledgement from the kingdom of this amid heightened tensions across the Middle East. Is a suggestion from Iran that this was Saudi Arabia striking back?
Yeah, that's the question, I guess. Is that Saudi Arabia? Who's responsible for the missiles? Or did Iran set up its own fake attack?
That would be the question, yes. We'll have more coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90.
Of all the ways to
Red
go.
Eye. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Thanks so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it. In the news today, lots going on. The Nobel Peace Prize, by the way, has been awarded to the Prime Minister of Ethiopia. Abiy Ahmed wins the 2019 Nobel Peace Prize. There had been thoughts out there that it was going to be Greta Thunberg, of course, but that did not happen. But we'll get into that more here in a little bit. Other breaking news overnight, an oil tanker belonging to the National Iranian Oil Company was hit and damaged by two missiles. Iranian state news reported the missiles were possibly fired from Saudi Arabian soil, said the head of the public relations of the National Iranian Tanker Company. No Iranian government officials have blamed the attack on any side at this stage. The tanker was 60 miles from a Saudi port on the Red Sea when the incident occurred, according to the news service. The resulting explosions caused oil to leak into the Red Sea. All the tanker's crews, the crew members are safe. Investigators are looking for the source of the missile, says the Iranian state media. News of the incident caused oil prices to rise. Prices for Brent crude jumped 2% to just over $60. West Texas Intermediate crude climbed nearly 2% to $54. So that's where we are right now. No more information on it. No verification or anything from the United States. So we are waiting for, you know, some news from the United States. And who knows? We know the U.S. Navy is over there, and we'll probably find out whether this attack really happened or not, because I'm assuming that somebody will have video of it sooner or later.
Right.
But that's where we are right now on that particular issue.
The point being, we can't trust anything coming out of Iran right now. You just can't. So until there is some kind of, I guess, confirmation by another source, we don't know, and nobody knows what happened. This has been going on for the past few hours. The story has been developing. I guess many people, and I would be included in that group, I wouldn't put it past Iran to set up their own situation like that.
No, that's one of the first things that you and I both thought when we saw the story. Went, okay. Are they looking for some sympathy? Now we know that Saudi Arabia does blame Iran for those drone attacks.
Right. Sure. And the point being is it looks like Iran is trying to get other nations to engage. Ultimately, what they want is they want back in the game. They want back in the game of selling oil, but they're not going to be able to do it. They want the sanctions lifted fully and completely, and that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Meanwhile, the president held a rally last night.
And your father was never considered smart. He was never considered a good senator. He was only a good vice president because he understood how to kiss Barack Obama's ass.
So things quite lively in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Also, protests were held. The protesters burning Trump hats, as we know, insulting police, you know, cursing at police, things like that. Mm-hmm. Look, this is going to happen over the next year. It's going to be a very, very politically vicious. And at times, I believe that you will see, and in any of these, you know, when you look at the vast majority of political protests that either get violent or vandalism is involved in it, it comes from the left. And so we don't be surprised to be seeing that. I wish we wouldn't see it, but that's on them.
Did they have to buy those hats in order to burn them?
You know,
because the whole point is raising money, is it not?
Yes. You would have to buy
it. Doesn't matter what you do with it. It's where the money's going. So if the protest group had to go out and buy a bunch of hats, I'm wondering if President Trump actually thanked them for that, for buying the hats in order to burn them. It doesn't matter what you do with them.
In other stories out there, lawyers for the CIA officer whose whistleblower complaint helped ignite an impeachment inquiry into President Trump have asked Congress whether their client could submit testimony in writing instead of appearing in person, according to people familiar with the matter. And that's direct from the Wall Street Journal.
Hmm. Yeah, okay.
Now, where this is going to go, who knows? Things have been very quiet. You and I noticed that nothing really on the second leaker, whistleblower.
Right.
Nothing on that, and really nothing from the Democrats after Trump sent the letter and Nancy Pelosi responded. And so, did you say you saw where they're up to 230 members?
Yeah, there was one story that I came across yesterday, and it said the number was at 230. Because it had been at 227, at least as of last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and unless that source had it wrong. But the point being is, either way, they have enough votes to get it done. The question is, why aren't they moving on that, on inquiry?
CNN Chris Cuomo in trouble. He joked about adopting female pronouns during the network's marathon presidential town hall series on LGBTQ rights.
No, Fredo, you can't do that.
Cuomo made the remark in response to Senator Kamala Harris, who said her pronouns were she, her, and hers as she walked out on stage. Mine too, Cuomo jokingly said in reply.
No, because what is at the base of that joke? Let's tear that joke aside. He's a male. And when he says mine too, then that would mean that he wishes, you know, the joke being, it, of course, sarcasm. Because you can't call a man a her.
But you can.
What's the whole point of Trent? You
can.
How did he not see that?
Yeah. I mean, because he apologized. Here it is. Cuomo, and I have to tell you, when I first came in, the story I was reading did not say he said it sarcastically. And I looked at Eric and I said,
that's the first thing we hit in our pre-show meeting.
Yes. I looked at you and I said, what am I missing? I don't. And then you looked at me because you had just walked in. You're like, well, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And I said, I hadn't seen that part of it yet.
And I said, well, here's what he said. And I'm reading here from TMZ. Cuomo apologizes for cringeworthy female pronoun joke at CNN LGBTQ town hall. Huh. Well, why can't he say mine too?
Now, he could if he were serious and he were coming out as transgender. He could.
Or if he's floating.
I'm sorry, she could.
Oh, if he's floating, and I'm not saying that sarcastically, if he's a floating gender, he could say it. But the whole point is you're not supposed to question somebody and their intent on that to begin with, right?
Yeah.
And so Cuomo mockingly replied, mine too. Harris responded with an all right. It's the mockingly that everybody's reporting that got him in trouble. And so the backlash on social media was immediate. And Cuomo apologized, tweeting, please read. When Senator Harris and her said her pronouns were she, her, and hers, I said mine too. I should not have. I apologize. I am an ally of the LGBTQ community, and I'm sorry because I am committed to helping us achieve equality. Thank you for watching our town hall.
Yeah. You know, how many do you think on the middle they're reaching with this whole thing?
None.
Zero. It is zero. Well, first of all, it's on CNN, so it's probably less than zero. But they're not reaching anyone in the middle. They're not. Tell me what the left, tell me what any of them right now, any of them are promoting as their main, as any top items on their agenda that reach people in the middle. Where would that be? You have Beto last night saying, you know, any church that does not support gay marriage would lose their tax exemption. So yeah. There's your attack on freedom of religion right there. By the way, we knew that was, that's been promoted before. There's nothing new coming from Beto.
Right.
Where do you have something that reaches people in the center? This is what they have to do to get to the White House. They've got to get enough people in the center on their side. Tell me what they're promoting, any of them, that does that.
Look, the climate change town hall was a bust. Nobody watched.
Right.
Going to be interesting to see what the audience was for this.
Right.
As, by the way, you know, it's, you know, Rachel Maddow was back to the top of the ratings the other night, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
right.
And why? Because what's she doing again? She's selling the same thing she sold last time.
It's that impeachment,
Trump,
yeah.
That Trump has to be guilty this time. We're going to get him this time.
It's the gotcha.
This time we're going to get him.
Well, and they know. I mean, the former, you know, editor of the New York Times saying that we knew and we saw it every time there was something about Trump, subscription rates skyrocketed. You know, so they keep thinking, they keep falsely delivering the big bombshell, and it's never a bombshell.
Coming up next, both Eric and I will tell you how we totally and completely agree with one 2020 Democratic presidential election candidate and what she had to say.
Oh.
We agree with her completely. You won't want to miss this rare moment coming up next on Red Eye Radio.
Some strong talk about China from the U.S. Agriculture Secretary as U.S. and Chinese negotiators begin a new round of trade talks in Washington. After visiting with farmers in Monroe, North Carolina Wednesday, Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue told reporters that China needs to know.
We're not going to surrender to their world domination efforts. And we know that agriculture is going to be retaliated against because that's the most productive sector we have. We're exporting and we're going to export surplus there.
As far as this administration's approach to getting a strong trade deal with China, Perdue said most farmers he's talked to are still behind those efforts.
And they don't want to deal with cheaters either.
So while some farmers are being hurt financially by the continuing trade dispute with China,
the market facilitation program is helping people to get through.
And Purdue says, for the most part, farmers are still
hanging in there.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We'll tell you what that Democrat candidate said that both Eric and I agree with coming up following the bottom of the hour. Let's go to Jim in New Mexico. We had talked about the whole Beto O'Rourke. You just mentioned it, what he said about the First Amendment and in the church, that mm-hmm. if any church that does not support gay marriage and gay rights would lose their tax-exempt status. And he was asked that question. He said, yes, he would be for that. Hi, Jim, you're on the radio.
Actually, you've covered so many topics. I want to talk about two things real quick that comes from the LGBTQ town hall. The first one, everybody needs to know that Beto O'Rourke is against the Second Amendment when he wants to ban our guns and have us turn them into the government. And now he's come out against anybody who disagrees with gay marriage needs to lose their tax-exempt status when it comes to the religious beliefs. Also, this Kamala Harris, and sorry, I just ran down a flight of stairs. Kamala Harris and all these other people with their pronoun issues, I think we should take a female pronoun and a male pronoun and a gender-neutral pronoun and come up with one pronoun that they all can use. So we should take she and he and then it. So we could have she and
he and it. We know where you're going. Well, the thing is, the point is, shouldn't it be an all-inclusive gender? Shouldn't we all be?
So we combine it. So we take the letter S.
We understand that. Yes, but shouldn't it be an all-inclusive gender? Shouldn't we all be all-inclusive?
Well, here's
the words. Why are we separating by gender in any way? Let's have an all-inclusive. Instead of separating into 100 different genders, why not have one inclusive term for all genders so we could all be of one gender universe?
You mean gender neutral?
Yeah.
I
like all inclusive, though.
Yeah. I think that's what they were trying to get at with gender neutral. But seriously, do they really believe this resonates with the center? I mean, how do you? This is the problem. We spelled it out for you after the last election. When you start pairing off into subgroups and other subgroups and other subgroups, you're splintering, you're dividing,
yes.
You're not uniting. And when you talk about things, what are they promoting right now in a positive way for all Americans? I mean, all people in the U.S., what are they promoting?
Who did it? It was a Democrat who said this the other day. They said the flaw with the Democrats right now. What's a Democrat's position on trade with China? What's a Democrat's position on really having a vibrant private economy in a realistic form? Doesn't exist out there. And it's funny because this was a Democrat going through the things that actually concerns Americans.
Mm-hmm.
But look, we said this a long time ago. During the Obama administration, they kept talking about climate change and race. Then they moved into the transgender activism.
Right.
But still, it was climate change and race. And when you would go and you would look, you'd actually go and look at what the American public care about, and that would be at the bottom of the list.
Right.
Both. They're like, well, those aren't problems. And it was amazing because even with Democrats, they weren't problems. When you put the list, if you ask, is global warming a problem, they're all going to say yes. When you give them a list and say, here are all the problems out there, what do you think? When you put the list down there, global warming and race at the bottom. And race especially at the bottom. Race was always at the bottom because people actually get along in this country all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Race and racism is a political issue in 2019. It's not a societal issue.
Right. Well, because they have to create the issue in order to solve it.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And this is something that this is a tactic being used by the left and has been used by the left for many years. That's exactly what they do. Here's your forecast.
Most of the nation's active weather happening east of the Mississippi today. We have a frontal boundary producing heavy showers from Wisconsin down through the Midwest, especially Illinois, then down into Missouri, Arkansas, and portions of eastern Texas today. That'll continue throughout the day, but as we get into tomorrow, a lot of that moisture will not make its way to the East Coast. But that frontal boundary also producing some afternoon thunderstorms today, which could be intense at times. Snow winding down throughout the day for the upper tier states, now centered on North and South Dakota. There is some icing out ahead of that system. It'll be moving by tomorrow, just mainly into the upper tier of North Dakota, hugging the Canadian border for the next 48 hours. Tonight into tomorrow, Minneapolis will pick up some snow flurries. Into the second weekend of October, there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Bona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Hurley. Okay, let's finish this week out. A couple of stories we've got to get to you. We both agree with this 2020 Democratic presidential candidate. We believe she is right. Absolutely 100% right.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Representative Tulsi Gabbard, the one of the 2020 Democratic presidential election candidates, threatened to boycott the next Democratic Party debate, claiming the DNC and the corporate media are rigging the election again.
Yes, they are.
She said, quote, "I need to share something with you that's very important. There are so many of you who I have had the opportunity to meet in Iowa and New Hampshire who have expressed to me how frustrated you are that the DNC and the corporate media are essentially trying to usurp your role as voters in choosing who our Democratic nominee will be." Gabbard declared in a video, "I share your concerns, and I'm sure all of our supporters throughout the country do as well." Now, the 2016 Democratic primary election was rigged by the DNC and their partners in the corporate media against Bernie Sanders. In this 2020 election, the DNC and the corporate media are rigging the election again. This time, it's against the American people in the early voting states of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada. They are attempting to replace the rolls of voters in the early states using polling and other arbitrary methods which are not transparent or democratic. And they're holding so-called debates, which really are not debates at all, but rather commercialized reality television meant to entertain rather to inform or enlighten. In short, the DNC and the corporate media are trying to hijack the entire election process. So in order to bring attention to this serious threat to our democracy and to ensure that your voice is heard, I am seriously considering boycotting the next debate on October 15th. I'm going to announce my decision in the next few days. There you go.
All right.
Well, I know. Now, she's going to be dismissed very quickly now. Why? She's going against the DNC, and she served in the military.
Yeah. She... I don't know what boycotting the debate would what she believes boycotting the debate would do for her.
Yeah, nobody cares. Actually, nobody in the Democrat Party cares. I mean, what does she
have?
They don't. 1 or 2% maybe?
Yeah.
So she's at, I haven't looked at the list.
I mean, I'm guessing she's barely qualifying for that debate.
Yeah.
In the first place.
Yeah. If you're going to boycott when it really doesn't matter, right?
Right, exactly.
Point.
Yeah.
In Iowa, she's a 2.3. Hmm. In New Hampshire, she's a 2.5. In national polls, she's not over a 2. I know that because she's below O'Rourke. Let me see. In national polls, she is at 0.7.
Hmm.
So she's doing. I mean, she's She's in the top 10 in Iowa and New Hampshire. So,
yeah, okay.
if you're gonna boycott when I'm gonna get out. Do I stand a chance? No. Okay, let's boycott.
Right.
So, but we agree with her on the rigging.
Yeah, it's been going. Yeah, yes. I mean, and thanks for the Ms. Gabbard for the reminder, because I think a lot of liberals forgot that, except for maybe those who support Bernie.
Well, the thing is, it's really interesting because they were furious when they thought that Donald Trump, and we knew he didn't, but when they had no evidence, but the accusation was made that Donald Trump rigged the election, well, then they were all upset, but they don't get upset when their own party rigs the election, do they?
Right. No, they don't.
Interesting. Lawyers for the CIA officer whose whistleblower complaint helped ignite the impeachment inquiry into President Trump have asked Congress if their client could submit testimony in writing instead of appearing in person. That's from the Wall Street Journal. We discussed that earlier in the show. They're doing that because they know, number one, that their client's losing credibility. The only way that the whistleblower has any type of, well, credibility to the converts is to not give you any type of transparency on who they are. And they're afraid that even if they testify from a remote location and have the face blurred out and everything else, that somebody's going to find out who they are, and we're already finding out more information, which is tainting this whole thing to begin with, especially when we found out, you know, serving, for the Obama administration and for Joe Biden. And, of course, people said, yeah, but they served in this administration, too. Well, yeah, we know they did, because you better make that statement, because if not, you've got a huge problem, because then whoever they got their firsthand information from leaked the information to a civilian, which is not part of the whistleblower process of the intelligence agencies to begin with. So we knew they worked for this administration because they filed a whistleblower complaint for the intelligence community. Duh. So it really doesn't mean anything, except you're getting closer to what? You're getting close to finding the political motivations of this person who did that. And they don't want that to happen.
Well, here's another thing, too. Are the Democrats concerned right now that this person, because they know, in fact, both of them, both so-called whistleblowers are leakers? The person who went to Adam Schiff's office and spoke to the staff, they leaked information in doing that. The person who spoke to that person, being the second whistleblower with firsthand knowledge, also leaked information. That's a crime. That's not a small crime either. And the question is, do the Democrats, is Pelosi worried about that? Adam Schiff should be. But is Pelosi worried about that? Because imagine that AG Barr or a federal prosecutor at some level is working on that case right now. Because it's likely that they know who the staffer was. It's a CIA officer who is assigned to the White House. But they know who that, it's likely they know who that person is. And they're probably getting close to the first whistleblower, the one that first, so-called whistleblower, that first came out and went to Adam Schiff's office. So I'm wondering if the attorney general or a federal prosecutor is working on something that's regarding that.
No, that is a great point, because you look at it, if you're the attorney general's office, you look at that and you say, well, number one, that's not a whistleblower, and they leaked.
Right. Because if the attorney general moved on that, or a federal prosecutor moved on that, any court, that would stand up in any court. Now, the lawyer represents both. One lawyer represents both of them. So the lawyer's going to show up and say, no, because they've got whistleblower protection. And then that could be where that court, that federal court, looks at that and says, no, they don't.
Yeah.
Or it could go other way. It could be, okay, we'll, I don't know, hit the pause button until that's determined. But they don't get whistleblower protection. I could see a court, I could see a federal court looking at that saying, if Attorney General Barr moved on the leaking crime, the leaking of classified information, if he moved on that, or a federal prosecutor did, and it ended up before the court, I could see a federal judge saying, no, they aren't afforded.
Oh, I agree with you.
At all.
Yes.
And that could be how the whole thing comes crumbling down, and we learn the name of both individuals.
And I'm wondering why that's never talked about in the media. You and I have talked about it many times because that came out first off. Well, they don't get whistleblower protection. How come that topic died? It seemed to die after the firsthand or secondhand issue, which we always found as a secondary issue, mm-hmm. because we said, well, you don't have to worry about that because the whistleblower doesn't have whistleblower status because the president talking to a foreign leader doesn't fall under the intelligence community.
Right. Right.
And nobody talks about that anymore.
Right.
Democrats don't bring it up. Republicans haven't brought it up. And I asked the question, why? And we don't know. I don't know what the answer is to it, but nobody has brought it up. But we'll see where that goes. Other news, there it is, whether it's the Wall Street Journal. We looked at Bloomberg. Also, some of the headlines out there saying that the U.S. and China trade talks have begun on a positive note. Look, I think it's almost, you see it from all the different media out there. This is going to be what they're calling a mini deal. And you and I talked about a partial deal a couple of weeks ago. We said, where can they go on this? And even what we had suspected was overshooting where they may actually go. Because this seems to be, and I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but from just reading what the publications are stating, everything that is on the table is basically damage caused by each side following the breakdown of early negotiations or following the issuance of early tariffs on the Chinese and then retaliation that went along all the way. You're not really getting anywhere. Now, I have no problem with it because, as I've said before, I believe the president needs to come to a resolution, even if he doesn't get anything right now. You drop the tariffs because if you lose the election, it's all gone to hell anyway, right?
Yeah, sure.
So there has to come to a point soon where you, and we said this soon, where you have to say, okay, let's cut our losses. What can we do? Okay, we're going to shake hands with the Chinese. We're going to take off all the tariffs. They're going to buy the amount of products that they were buying before, and maybe 10% more. Because if you get that 10% more, that's actually a victory because you didn't have that beforehand. Mm-hmm. So if you could do that, and then, they said, currency manipulation from the Chinese. But the real accusation of currency manipulation came after the tariffs, did it not?
Right.
And as we've said before, we manipulate our currency.
We do it all the time.
Every time the president says, doggone it, we need to get interest rates down to zero, the president is advocating manipulating the value of our currency.
Right.
So we've always stated this when Romney was doing it back then, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, during the debates.
Yes, we need to get the Chinese to stop manipulating our currency. Well, we need to stop manipulating ours too in other ways.
Yes.
We all do it in a little different way, but we're all trying to manipulate our own currency.
Right.
So really, you never solve any of the big problems of intellectual property rights or the subsidies that they still have on products in China. The vast majority are still there. If you could whittle away on that a little bit, and that's what we wondered, and put everything aside, you could claim victory and an advancement from where you were.
Right.
But from what I see right now, there doesn't seem to be any type of significant advancement, except let's plug a hole in the damage dam because of the tariffs and retaliation we put on each other.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, if you get back to zero, you gain nothing new. Then you're basically admitting that all of these extra tariffs were wrong. And that you were wrong to implement them.
Well, or you're admitting it's not going to work right now, so we're going to try it again after the election.
Well, it's not working for you politically. It's because it's not working for you economically.
Was it a wrong maneuver, or is it wrong morally? Because the goal is moral, to try to get China, to abide by the intellectual property,
sure,
rights of companies, mm-hmm. and not coercing them to give it up in order to do business. So right. we'll see where it goes. 866-90-RED-EYE.
There's a new Shell Rotella engine oil for gas engines. Shell Rotella Gas Truck is available now. Megan Pino, Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager, tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
Obviously, Shell Rotella's heritage is heavy-duty engine oil, and that will remain our heritage. And we know that our customers work hard, but they also love to play hard. And many of our customers also own a gasoline-powered pickup truck, SUV, and perhaps as a personal vehicle or as part of the business. We also know that truck owners use their trucks for different purposes than a car, to be able to tow something, whether that's an RV or a boat for fun on the weekend, for your business, for hauling equipment. So you're doing something different with your truck than you are with a car. And so why use the same motor oil that you would in your car as your truck? There are three viscosity grades, 0W20, 5W20, and 5W30, which covers any gasoline-powered pickup truck or SUV in terms of the manufacturer recommendation.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, he's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Just understand, everybody, understand there's going to be major breaking news in the next hour, probably.
Well, the IG report, we were told that it was going to come out, by Friday. Well, it's probably going to hit this morning.
Well, you know why? Because we're going on vacation.
Because we're going
now.
On vacation.
That's why.
Hillary will jump in at noon.
Hillary's going to jump
IG
in.
The IG report about 10 a.m.
Right.
Then you'll probably have...
The Bills will win the Super Bowl.
Biden will announce he's dropping out. I mean, the prediction will come that the Bills will definitely win the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
All these big stories. Have a great vacation.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.